Welcome to this interview. I'm Megan Gibson, co-host of the Relationship Super Conference. Today, I'm speaking with Jocelyn and Aaron Freeman, who are known as the couple that coaches couples, and for their skills-based approach to communicating better and fighting smarter. They are the authors of The Argument Hangover and creators of the Couples Workshop, which has sold out over 60 times. Jocelyn and Aaron Freeman, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having us for this conversation.
Yes.
So I am of the mind, and maybe it's just me, but that every couple eventually has some sort of argument or fight, right? It's very common. So I would love to go through kind of the difference between healthy and unhealthy conflict. It's not a matter of like when or if it ever happens. It's like when we're having an argument, what's healthy and what's unhealthy conflict.
Absolutely. I want to speak to one thing that is, I think, important and really shifts perspective for people about conflict, because I think people associate conflict with something's wrong in the relationship. For some, especially if maybe their parents divorced, like for myself, it can mean breakups or the end of a relationship. This is bad. It means we're going down the wrong direction. What we find, and we work with couples all day, every day, is that the relationships that end, the marriages that end, very rarely were because of too much fighting. It was often because of too little, which I know sounds odd. And we'll talk about the difference between what a healthy fight would look like versus an unhealthy. But when they were avoiding conflict, and this is one of our quotes from our book, avoiding conflict in the short term builds resentment in the long term. And resentment is harder to repair from than it is to repair from a healthy argument. And so again, it isn't the goal to focus on avoiding conflict. It is, we need to learn to fight smarter. And what we say, shorten the argument hangover. Shorten the amount of time that you're disconnected afterwards, because if it's going days, it starts to erode a sense of trust, of connection. You want to speak a little bit more to healthy versus unhealthy?
Very simply, and I love analogies, your conflict is healthy or unhealthy based on this right here. Because I like sports, right? Sports, you have a boxing match, which is one person against another. Then you have, let's say, like a basketball game, which is a team against another team. So in healthy conflict, in relationship, you stay as a team looking at the challenge or problem. Unhealthy conflict, simply all of a sudden, you're two boxing opponents going against each other.
Mm-hmm. Good summary.
Got it. So it's more like the thing you're arguing about is the football. You're trying to advance it down the field, not, or I know we have a large British audience. I was, soccer, whatever kind of ball, that we're talking about. But the problem is the ball, you're trying to advance it down the field, not fight each other for the ball. You're on the same team.
Absolutely. And not using each other as the outlet for your emotion. So you may or may not ask questions about this, but a huge part of healthy versus unhealthy is how much mastery do you have over your own triggers? And are you aware of what you're saying and what you're doing during the conflict? So emotion is okay. We all need to learn to actually be more comfortable with emotion and feeling uncomfortable and having those hard conversations. That's where more bonding and intimacy can happen. So it isn't that we can't have tension. We can't have those moments of discourse. It's, are you doing damage to each other? Are you using each other out as an outlet for your triggers, for your emotion? And that's where the damage gets caused.
Well, lastly, think about being on the pitch then, right? A team faces an opponent. In this case, we're talking about you as a team, as a couple facing a challenge. Now that team goes into a hard fought match and they come out of it. And as team members, they have more trust in each other. They have built a bond. They're stronger as a team now, right? And yet how often do we allow conflicts in a relationship to do the very opposite to us? So challenges are not bad. They're actually the material for you to come to a more understanding of yourself, but also get more creative, resourceful, innovate in a sense in your own relationship and what you want together, rather than the unhealthy conflict. Again, it's just you're putting yourselves against each other, you're escalating emotion, and then you're doing more damage to each other. But conflict by itself is a good thing. It brings bonding if you can use it correctly.
Yeah. So, and walk me through that a little bit, because I know in my relationship and in my experience, those triggers, like you're arguing before you realize you're triggered a lot of the time, right? Even though that's what's happened, clearly, like there's been a misunderstanding, there's been a miscommunication, you've interpreted something that isn't real because of your history. You're not in the present necessarily. So walk me through how you recommend to couples that evaluation, that self-accounting of figuring out what those triggers are.
Oh yeah. Well, and we have a whole section in our book about identifying triggers. So, but giving you a summary here, you know, there's three parts to a trigger. There's the triggering event, there's the triggered emotion, and then there's the triggered behavior. And a lot of times people don't sit down to take an inventory of themselves. People step over self-reflection a lot and they just kind of live life and like, you know, maybe things will come up. We're huge advocates of really getting to know yourself, spending that time journaling, et cetera. So one of the things you could be reflecting upon is what are the things that trigger me? Triggering events, the first part of a trigger. Those could be certain words. And you want to identify specifically, right. Does it trigger you when your partner relates to you as your parent? Does it trigger you when they say things that sound like you're not doing good enough? You know, so is it certain words? Is it tone of voice? Is it certain behaviors? Like perhaps if you grew up in a home where there was a lot of, you know, kind of violence in a way, in terms of how they use their hands and everything, it might be triggering if your partner uses their hands a lot or slams things, makes a lot of noise. It can be several different types of triggering events, but you want to get very specific because if you don't have awareness, how can your partner have awareness? And then how could they be your teammate in helping handle those triggers differently? So we have learned a lot about each other's triggers. And we have agreements. This would be a whole other conversation about how we handle triggers, both our own and each other's. Do you want to add anything more about triggers?
So then what happens, the whole trigger is about the emotion that comes, right? Mm-hmm. So now identifying this event happened. All right, what emotion am I feeling? Is it anger, frustration, sadness, disrespect, feeling lack of love? Feeling not seen or understood. So you really want to check in with what is now the emotion that is coming up for me. And to be completely honest, a lot of us men in particular have not taken the time to maybe sit or reflect and even give actual words and language to what our body is feeling inside. And if we don't have the language or words, how can we possibly expect our partner to understand? We can't. So there is some work there. I know I have gone through a number of years of doing this myself to build a vocabulary and a sense of describing my interiority process, the emotion that's happening there, right? I got to get that for myself. Now, once I identify that, that's going to be sort of the trigger, if you will, for me noticing when I'm triggered. It'll be that emotion. Because then the third part is the triggered behavior. And this is the key to triggers. Because now, without awareness, that emotion automatically produces some action, something that you say. It's just a pattern by default. It's totally unconscious, and it's typically not very positive. It doesn't benefit you, really. It doesn't benefit your partner. Mm-hmm. And that's what we want to check in on. Is there something now that when this event happens, this emotion is, it arises in you, you automatically say this, you automatically do this. And it can be reactionary, but can also be repressive. I used to get triggered and then want to avoid and leave the room. That's just as a triggered behavior as the lashing out, right? With tone of voice or with words or putting my partner down. Mm-hmm. So just rounding this out then, right? Most people think, okay, I'm understanding triggers. I'm just going to try not to get triggered. Meaning try to not have emotion. No, this is impossible. You're a human being meant to experience life and experience emotion. That is really what we're here for. What we want to focus on is breaking that step between the emotion and the automatic default unconscious reaction that would happen, because that's what causes long argument hangovers. That's what causes more damage to our partners. That's what erodes our connection. So that's the goal. Feel your emotion, but just be able to have awareness to stop yourself from taking the automatic unconscious reactions.
Right. Because maybe I'm just speaking for myself here, but I think everybody's had the experience where they've had an argument. And then at the end, they're like, what even began this? What were we even arguing about? All I know is that I'm mad and I'm sad and I feel alone, or, you know, I feel awful, but I don't even remember what the point was that we started with.
Absolutely. Well, and that's a huge part of the contributing factor to that is, yes, triggers, but also that you're not listening to each other. And people think listening is an automatic thing that's happening, like digestion or breathing, right? Like, oh, I don't have to think about it because I have ears. I'm listening. No, listening is actually an active action. It requires your participation and your focus. You might hear the vibrations, but to truly listen, and we have three different types of listening. There is not listening at all, just hearing, and then truly listening. And we have this whole column of examples of what it looks like in each of the three. But it's important to know that if you want to improve your communication and you want to improve the way that you're fighting, you have to master listening. And it is not something that you're going to be automatically good at. It's just not. And actually, we could do a whole course just on listening. That's how much it really requires presence and focus and intention to be listening, to understand, and to empathize with your partner. You know, if we don't always agree with each other, we're with each other 24/7. We understand each other.
That was even before quarantine.
Right. We love each right. other a ton. And there are times where I'm like, I don't know how that's your reality. Like, I just, you know, I just see it so differently. And we set that aside and we say, let's listen to understand each other. I want to empathize with your perspective. And we actually have to set that intention. It doesn't automatically happen. We have to go, okay, let's change the way we're listening to each other right now.
You mind if I share about the trap?
Absolutely. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, the trap right there is that you not actually listening to the experience of your partner. What almost all couples do is they get stuck in the trap of the topic, the subject, or the activity.
The details.
You know, so I'll give you an example of the dishwasher for me, right? I would start to notice Jocelyn putting like heavy bowls and like heavy pots and pans on the top rack. And I'm just thinking, that's not where that goes at all. And so I found myself starting to make comments and I would start to get triggered because it seemed like she just didn't get it. Stop putting these things on the top rack, right? These go on the bottom. When I did my reflection, first of all, and then you can see how this correlates to what a partner can do, the dishwasher had broke, and then I took it upon myself to fix it. So I got a new one. I was doing some light welding and pipe fitting, and I actually got the dishwasher to work and to not leak. I'm like, that's a huge win for me. Mm-hmm. Now, as I started to see Jocelyn put these dishes or the heavy bowls in the top rack, it's not about the dishwasher at all. It was about that I did not feel acknowledged or respected for the 6 to 7 hours that I put in on that and that I gave my time to do. And so that's what was really driving it, right? But most couples would stay at the level of the activity. It doesn't matter where the dishes go. Why are you making a big deal out of this?
And or, it could be like, don't you see all the things I do? That's never good enough, right? And so then it becomes right. about even something more. And I'm battling now for like, but you don't respect what I do. And it becomes all about that.
And then your partner gets triggered, right? So the basis here is take any subject area of your life. And if you're arguing about that's not how it went, that's not what I meant, that wasn't my intent, none of this matters. If you let all of that go and you get to, oh, so it seems like you're upset about the dishwasher. Why is that? It sounds like maybe you feel like maybe disrespected. Mm-hmm. If we just focus on what is the experience, and let's tie this back to the emotional triggers. If you were more intent on understanding the triggered emotion for your partner, you are miles ahead in having a healthy conflict. If you are just going to talk about the logic or the sequence of events or the activities, you're basically lost because you're never going to see it the same exact way. However, if you get to the experience and emotion of your partner, we're in a different conversation.
Yeah, I can imagine. I remember my husband and I definitely got into those traps early in our relationship where we were doing the play-by-play of, well, you said this, and then you said that, you know, like, let's figure out where it started so we can avoid it again. And then we finally got to the point where we could figure out what we were arguing about, but then the work was like the emotion behind it, really like feeling into it. And you said something earlier that I want to touch back on, and about kind of the ways that you can avoid an argument. And sometimes that listening aspect circles back here is, I'm here, and like on the outside, it looks like I'm here, but I've actually totally left, right? Which I know I've experienced in arguments with people where I'm like, we are literally looking at each other, but you're not here. Where did you go? Right.
Absolutely. Well, and it sounds like in that too, it's knowing when it's time to continue the conversation and when it's time to take a pause. Right. And that doesn't mean walking out on the other person, regardless of whether this disagreement is with your romantic partner, a child, a parent. It's when is the constructive and not constructive. And if it's not feeling like the other person is able to be present, because when you're triggered, and we give a little bit of science in our book, we both love science, but so we don't get too geeky in the book. But one of the principles we talk about is how when someone is triggered and emotion is coming up, there's something called an amygdala hijack, which is when a part of your brain actually takes over and you're not thinking logically. And so we have to understand the science of what's happening inside of ourselves. And the moment that you are no longer able to be present and listen to your partner, and you just know you need to take a break, you will have to call a timeout. But a timeout is different than walking out. Walking out gives the other person a sense of abandonment, that it doesn't matter to them. And a lot of times what we hear from couples in our sessions is, we never come back to things. And so it's just always lingering. And we have this quote in our book where we say, when you're constantly just sweeping things under the rug, like, oh, let's just move on from that one. Let's move on. Eventually that rug becomes a tripping hazard because there's just so much underneath it. So it's not about walking out on the other person. A timeout is intentionally saying, hey, this isn't constructive, or I'm not able to be present right now because I'm feeling emotional, but I know we need to come back to this. Let's come back tonight. Tomorrow morning, sometime in the near future, so that both you and your partner value that you need to come back and get that conversation complete. So it isn't there for future reference to come back up again.
It becomes another trigger.
It surprises you again, right? So timeout versus walking out is really important.
And that timeout, imagine, gives you the time for that amygdala hijack to physically like calm down, for the threat or the perceived threat to simmer and settle, so that that's not also an accompaniment to the conversation, so that you're not feeling like you need to flee or you need to fight or all of them, right? And that commitment to like, we will come back to this, and really setting the intention of it is so important. I know that that happens to lots of people. We're not going to talk about this right now. Like, we need to come back to it. And then, okay when?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Tying this together, the real practical step to help anyone with their triggers, as you start to notice this, you want to make what we call in the book again, specific agreements. And we say, start with four, right? Because four, you can remember and you can implement. But as you start to notice triggers for yourself, and like a part of my role as a partner was to notice and give language to what that emotion was, as well as the behavior. So what I would say to Jocelyn is, hey, I'm really interested, first of all, in having our, you know, conflicts and challenges really be places where we stay in the same team and we stay connected. And I notice that a trigger for me is X. You know, I might say, hey, I'm not trying to control you here, but for me, when you swear or when you turn your back and walk out, that's a trigger for me. So to help me stay in the moment and not get triggered, I'd like to make a request around neither one of us swearing or neither of us turning and just walking out. So I make a request for an agreement for times of conflict around what I notice my triggers are. And having this timeout request is a really powerful agreement to make. Hey, when we both feel that emotion is escalating, we're in that hijack place, we're not present, one of us can request this timeout and it's immediately honored. And we say, okay, yes, we'll come back to this, and we set a time. So that's a powerful way to set agreements, to look at it from the perspective of what are my triggers, I say, have one of you come up with two, the other person come up with two, you know, it's equal balance. And then really try that out over the next week, over the next month, and see the difference that that makes.
I love that. Let's talk about what you guys define as an argument hangover. I mean, you know, the only marriage advice that you get to when you get married is like, don't go to bed angry, but nobody ever expands on like what that means. And maybe you should occasionally go to bed angry, but then what's the next step, right?
Absolutely. So an argument hangover. So most people kind of smirk when we say that, because they're like, that is so what it feels like. We almost don't have to define it. But to give it a definition, an argument hangover is that period of time after a disagreement that lasts all the way until you fully resolve it and reconnect emotionally. And for some couples, that argument hangover is a day, 2 days, 3 days. We've talked to some couples about certain conflicts that they've been in an argument hangover for months, meaning they've been kind of just tolerating each other, kind of giving each other the one word answers, right? It's been unrepaired for that long. And so the whole goal, as we said in the beginning, is not to avoid conflict. In our research and thousands of sessions that we've done, the better goal, and Aaron touched on this, but I'll just say it again, is to shorten your argument hangover. So if it's normally 2 days before you repair, which if you think about it, you're giving up 2 days of life, of being disconnected, and you know your energy is lower. You're not feeling your best. You're not showing up for your kids. You're not showing up at work the best. So you're letting this linger around for many reasons that we could also touch on. And if it's normally 2 days, make it 4 hours. If it's normally half a day, try to get it down to an hour. We have gotten ours down and down and down, where we now pretty much repair, unless it's like a really big topic that came up, 15 minutes. We like take a break, come back, repair. And we have a whole process for the five R's to repair that we may not have time to go into depending on this conversation, but shorten your argument hangovers. Shorten them, make it so that you're repairing and reconnecting. Why? Because that's how you maintain trust, security, and you are showing each other that I'm not willing to lose life being disconnected from you. And this is something really important to understand. To end the argument hangover, you cannot just rely on saying, I'm sorry. Yeah. And we were interviewed on Sunday night, and it was great. This couple, they raised their hand to share something. And he's like, I try to say as sorry as much as possible. But then she brings it up a few days later, even though she said, I forgive you. But I already said, I'm sorry. And all we typically are taught to do is say, I'm sorry. So we aren't given a lot of additional language. But why is it that that doesn't fully repair it? Well, because for the person receiving that, I'm sorry, number one, if it's said often, it means a lot less. But also, it doesn't show that person that you understand the root cause of your behavior, why that happened. So it's like, okay, I know you're sorry, but how do I know anything's going to be different? And so people step over doing the work to understand what are they really apologizing for, and what does the partner need to hear to truly forgive whatever happened.
Right. And we put so much value on that. When people are kids, it's the importance of the phrase, not the importance of the meaning. And I know I've started with my children. It's like, I'm sorry is not enough. We have to, it's a sentence stem beginning, mm-hmm. not a full yes. sentence. Right. Just this morning, I was talking with a friend whose relationship ended with an argument hangover. I mean, like, that was it. That was right. And they weren't, you know, in a marriage, but they were in a committed long-term relationship. And literally and she had no idea that that was what was going to happen. And my heart went out to her. I was the way that she's going to carry that forward into relationships and the kind of trigger that you would develop, because you're not able to kind of resolve that. I mean, these kinds of things can be relationship enders, as I'm sure you've seen.
Many times, yeah.
I mean, if relationships are for learning, then just by ending a relationship, you're not getting the lesson and the transformation for yourself. So though you'll get into another relationship and that person's triggers are not going to be the same as your previous partner's triggers, but you've just built up really the same triggers within yourself. That lesson is still out there for you to learn. So you're still bringing that to the table. It might take some time for it to reveal itself, but guess what? It's going to show up. So we are, you know, we're really about people being able to get into alignment in their relationships. And sometimes relationships weren't really in alignment from the beginning because people didn't exactly look at whether it was in alignment to start it. So sometimes relationships do need to complete. But you can complete a relationship. You know, some people say end. We say complete because there are steps to go through to really acknowledge the lessons and the transformation and still complete a relationship with gratitude and at least being thankful to the other person for where you did both grow. That's a powerful place to be because now you show up as a fresh, let's say, blank slate for the relationship rather than bring all that in for the next one.
I do want to briefly add on to that because alignment can sometimes be received as, oh, well, if my partner isn't a good communicator and our fights are just terrible, then maybe we're just not aligned. And again, I want to make sure it's so, so clear that none of us went to a relationships 101 or a communications 101. And so it is not for most people that we talk to, as much as they might be successful in life, we've worked with uber successful people and they might be great with money and great at leading a company. And if they weren't modeled great communication growing up, why would you expect them to know? It is a learned skill. And our motto, and it's on our website, is that behind any relationship challenge is a missing relationship skill that can be learned. There are skills that are a part of having a healthy relationship. Just like if you wanted to be a doctor, you're learning skills. If you wanted to be a great chef, there are certain skills. And so don't think, oh, because we don't have, you know, good communication, we're not aligned. No, you first try to acquire the skills. And that's why couples coaching, which is what we do, is helpful. Attending workshops, let's gain skills and see how that helps us before we just assume we're not aligned for each other.
Yeah. And talk through just briefly what some of those skills are specifically, because I love what you said. It's like, these are things that can be learned, techniques that can be learned that don't have anything to do with your communication style, right? Because people can have different communication styles. And if they share the same skills, they're going to have that bridge between them, I imagine.
Yeah. We've mentioned a few so far.
Go ahead. I'm even kind of summarizing. The first one, which we didn't really mention, is having a collaborative vision statement. You know, we notice what is the common thread between successful businesses, which even are entities called partnerships that have in common with partnerships in a romantic setting. And that is a vision. It is a description of the purpose and what your relationship is meant to represent. So you kind of identify your relationship as a bigger entity than either one of you. And then both of you, by being in a relationship, bring your uniqueness, your talents, your skills, your gifts, your expression in service of the collaborative vision statement that you both have. Now, once you have that established, I mean, you're going to need things like agreements. You should have agreements for times of conflict. You should have just overall agreements for workability. You should also be looking at what your triggers are. You should also seek to shorten your argument hangovers.
Conflict skills, communication skills, which there are subsets, right? If communication's a category, conflict's a category, there's sub skills to that. Listening, clearly asserting yourself. We could spend an hour with you just talking about being assertive. There's being able to communicate clearly. There's how do we handle when one of us is emotional? There is how do we repair from conflict? I mean, we could list a ton, and I don't want listeners to think like, well, I don't know how I'd acquire all these. You know, we have many other resources that I'm sure you'll mention where we're super organized people. We love when it's like, here, focus on these five things.
These steps.
And so we're happy to help with those additional resources.
All right. So I want to talk about the way that in the style in which people argue and how it impacts their intimacy and vulnerability in their relationship.
Absolutely. So can you say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, that... And I think you touched on it at the beginning when you were talking about people that don't argue, but even for people that do argue, if you're not resolving, if you're not aware of what your typical argument hangover time period might be. If you're not even, I mean, I don't know if you tell me, when you talk to couples, are they even aware of the typical length of time that an argument hangover takes for them?
Like, if do we they know? Ask them, like if we have, and they pause for a second and they reflect. And so for the most part, they could be like, you know, I think on average it's 2 days, or I think it's a whole day. They can kind of create an average.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if, you know, even if you know, and you're aware of it, the ways, kind of the fractures that those things can, I mean, if I had an argument with my spouse and then, you know, we didn't talk about it and we didn't connect for a day, like that would feel awful. I would not, if I was feeling vulnerable or if I really needed some companionship, like I would not approach my partner during that time period. So I imagine that it's just kind of, it's not building those arguments, and that term or that period are not building vulnerability. They're not building intimacy. And I imagine that comes from those stages of repair that you've talked about.
Yeah.
Well, I want to bring up two things to that. One being blame and one being safety, right? So I think a deeper thing is, when you talk about vulnerability, if you want to bring a conversation to your partner about sharing your experience or where you've been impacted, whether you feel disrespected, you feel really frustrated, you feel abandoned or isolated, obviously you're doing that kind of work on your own. But if you initially start that conversation with blaming and pointing the finger at your partner that they're the reason that you feel this way, that's going to put them on the defensive. So a part of the bigger work as a human being, right, is nothing outside of you is really causing this within you, right? You are the one that controls the experience within. You don't control that many things without, you know, somewhat, maybe 50, 60%, but you don't control everything, even the response of your partner. So the work is to look at what is the meaning you're giving things and the experience that you're dictating within yourself. Now, the second part is, if I feel like I've even tried to share with my partner, I'm not even pointing the finger or blaming, but my partner responds to me in ways that, when I'm vulnerable, that says you shouldn't be feeling that way. That doesn't make sense, which again is really a part of their inability to be with the impact. However, they're putting it back on you. So it feels unsafe. I can't bring this up because I'm just going to be shut down. I'm going to be invalidated. They're going to justify why their action was okay. And that just feels totally unsafe. And it also feels like futile. What is the point here? Right. So those are the two things. Right. That we've seen a lot.
And you mentioned the phrase emotional intimacy, which I think the way we connected online was you had enjoyed a couple of our social media posts on intimacy and emotional intimacy. And we had this image of a couple kind of separated from each other. There was space, and in between them was all this clutter. Right. So in the beginning of a relationship, there's tons of intimacy because it's just all the fun stuff and love and you're affirming each other. But the more and more that you are letting argument hangovers linger and you're not expressing your needs and assuming that they should, and you're not listening to each other and you're not creating that safety, as Aaron talked about, there's all this clutter that kind of pushes you away from each other in an energetic sense. And so it's the clutter that you need to work on to create that intimacy. People try to do stuff on top of that. Oh, more date nights. That'll do it.
Right.
Oh, more vacations. No. Let's have a child. Let's have a child. Right. I mean, people do that all the time. Maybe if we move, maybe if we make more money and we can go on more trips, then, you know, again, it's like all these things trying to do it on top of this. No, it's the clutter. If you want to feel more intimacy, it's repairing faster. It's creating emotional safety for each other and responding better to each other's emotions and those vulnerable moments. If you're rejecting each other's vulnerability, I mean, that impact is huge.
Absolutely. Well, this has been fantastic. Do you guys have anything that you want to add before we wrap up?
Just, I mean, encouragement for people that if you're hearing this and it all feels like, oh man, we've got a lot to work on, you know, where would we begin? Just remember what I said about skills, and that we both were not great at this. I watched my parents go through a super intense divorce, and I repeated a ton of their patterns that were unhealthy. Aaron, his parents are still married, but he never saw them argue, right? And so you're not necessarily going to have the same blueprint, but that doesn't mean you can't gain the same skills together and focus on that. You're not flawed. There's nothing wrong with you. Focus on the skills, and we're happy to help with some of our resources.
And where can people find out about you and all the resources that you've mentioned?
Yeah. So multiple places, you know, one being our website, we have meetthefreemans.com. That's also our Instagram handle, where we keep people up to date with different workshops that we're doing and different things that we're promoting, Meet the Freemans. And then also our book. I mean, a great place to start is with the Argument Hangover book. And for those of you watching this, we actually give $200 worth of free bonuses, a communication and conflict course, a workbook, and all of that can be claimed as well as the retailer links at theargumenthangover.com.
Awesome. Jocelyn and Aaron, thank you so much.
Thanks for having us for this great conversation.